Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And Jim, it wasn't that long ago that we were celebrating a vote in the House of Representatives. President Obama's budget got finally brought up for an up or down vote, and it got edged out 414 to nothing. Not one single Democrat went along with it in the House. That followed on the heels of last year, the Senate rejecting it unanimously. But the Senate is not about to let the House steal its thunder. 99 to nothing yesterday as the Republicans finally unveiled some of their proposals, which, of course, the Democrats didn't want. The Democrats have no ideas of their own, but at least they went along with all the Republicans in once again unanimously rejecting the Obama budget. So nobody seems to know what they want in the Democratic Party. They just know that they can't possibly live politically with the president's budget, and they don't want to give the Republicans any credit.
Greg, it's time to give credit where it's due. President Obama is a uniter, not a divider. He has brought all members of the Senate, all members of the House to agree on something. There are really not that many people to agree with that. Remember, Barbara Lee of California voted against military action in Afghanistan after 9/11.
That's
so
right.
Not even that could unite everybody, but Obama's budget can. So what they'll be quick to point out is that, well, this is a procedural vote. The Republicans were mischief-making, and this was not really a vote. There are many Democrats who stand with the president's budget guy. What's kind of fascinating is, all right, if you don't like the way the Republicans did it because of the procedural wrangling on this, then bring it up to the actual budget itself. Do it yourself. Why won't Harry Reid bring in Obama's budget or his own budget or something like that? And none of these things happen. We have this, the Senate has turned into this giant glob of cholesterol clogging the artery of national policy and legislation here. It's, you know, amusing. It gives us a very fun, easy talking point. Democrats can kind of harm us. Oh, it wasn't really that. Well, then fine, guys. Introduce your own legislation, and let's see how many Democrats you can get for it. My guess is that the Claire McCaskills and John Testers and other Democrats who are running in red states don't want to touch this thing with a 10-foot pole. So they are very, very comfortable in a world in which they, you know, get to vote down every budget and, you know, just kind of let the spending continue as under the deal that came in during the debt ceiling crisis. They don't really want to vote on budgets because then they get on the record on something and that can be held against them.
Jim, I was fascinated this morning when I heard that Harry Reid plans to introduce updated sanctions on Iran. And I was thinking to myself, when was the last time Harry Reid actually moved on an issue? Was it the Buffett rule or something else that was just mainly done for political staging? Because basically, I think this guy has taken just about every day off so far.
It's nice to see him doing something, showing up to work, you know. There are days it feels like the president doesn't do that. So credit where it's due. You know, they're passing something. You just kind of figure the budget would be, you know, kind of front and center as one of the key responsibilities of the Senate.
So, yeah. You would think so. Apparently, there's a growing consensus for a no budget, no get paid rule on Capitol Hill. But I think we're a ways away from a majority in both chambers from agreeing to that. It'd be nice, though. On to martini number two now, Jim. And one of the issues that legitimately scared President Obama back when he was Senator Obama and running for the nomination and the White House back in 2008 was the emerging scandal in the middle of the Democratic primaries involving Jeremiah Wright and the president being a member of his church, having Wright perform his marriage ceremony, baptize his kids, and somehow in 20 years plus, never heard any of these radical sermons. Most people thought that debate was limited to 2008. The issue got out there. People decided, at least a majority, that they didn't care. But now, a Republican-affiliated super PAC has decided that this affiliation between President Obama and Jeremiah Wright is something that needs further scrutiny and that more people need to be aware of it. And this is kind of a weird bad martini in that people should be aware of this. The question is, will people just see this as dredging up old issues that have already been discussed? Is there really anything new here? Or will this potentially be another bright, shiny object that people from the right bring up rather than letting the focus stay on the economy?
Yeah, it's one of those things that Romney camp has already said they repudiate this effort. They're not affiliated with it. They disagree with it. And I don't think I necessarily would call this it's not an all-out bad martini. I think I can call this an ominous martini because I think that most voters are going to be evaluating President Obama on the job he's done over the last 4 years. I think Republicans have a very strong case to be made on that. I'm not going to say that Jeremiah Wright is an irrelevant issue. This tends to really resonate with conservatives who are absolutely convinced that Obama was not properly vetted in 2008. I think you can make a very strong argument about that. Having said that, I don't know. The question is, should you be going with messages that really, you know, stir up excitement in your base, or do you want to do messages that kind of win over folks in the middle. And, you know, you can walk and chew gum at the same time. And this is, as I said, an independent super PAC that can, it's a free country. They can run ads on anything they like. I think if I were, you know, trying to advise the Romney camp or the super PAC, I'd try to kind of bridge the two. And I think probably the most interesting thing I found about the right controversy was that Obama said, as these, you know, videos and stuff started coming forward, that Obama claimed with a straight face that he never heard Jeremiah Wright say anything inflammatory. Not just that he didn't see the particular sermons that were on video. We all remember, you know, Damn America, et cetera, et cetera. That he really did, you know, that he didn't hear him ever say anything all that controversial. Now, Greg, we're talking about a man, Jeremiah Wright, who uses the term garlic noses to describe Italian Americans, okay? You can't tell me that he, you know, was always on his very best behavior around Barack Obama, and then as soon as Obama left the room, then he let out this inner id of hate speech and such. So I think what's useful about citing Jeremiah Wright is that, look, when confronted with something very uncomfortable for him, very politically damaging to him, something that could really damage the image he wanted to present to the American public, that Barack Obama's instinct was to lie and to offer a really strikingly implausible lie that, you know, he had never heard Wright say anything like this. I mean, I just don't think you can, you know, believe that considering the personality we've seen of Jeremiah Wright. So that could be useful. It's easy to see this backfiring. I'm already seeing the even-tempered Roland Martin of CNN saying that, well, now Mormonism is back on the table, as if it was ever off, Greg. right. But, you know, I mean, this you know, it's wonder if you this super PAC is playing into the Obama campaign's strategy of bringing up something that you and I would call a shiny object, a non-economic issue that they can talk about so that people don't pay attention to high unemployment, high gas prices, shrinking median income, and all these other indicators that demonstrate the failure of the Obama administration.
On to Martini number three now, Jim, and there's no greater campaign asset for President Obama than his vice president, Joe Biden.
Better than everybody else.
Common resident of the third Martini, and he was out on the campaign trail yesterday, and, he became unhinged. We're used to Joe Biden saying things that are just patently untrue and embarrassing himself and his administration, but now he's decided to go after Mitt Romney because he thinks Mitt Romney's argument is that poor people really shouldn't have big dreams, apparently, because he's upset that Mitt Romney and other conservatives believe that liberals like Biden, Obama, and others have class envy and wealth envy, and that's really what's behind all the frustrations on the left right now.
I resent the fact that they think we're talking about we're envy. It's job envy. It's wealth envy. That we don't dream. My mother believed and my father believed that if I wanted to be president of the United States, I could be vice president. My mother and father believed that if my brother or sister wanted to be a millionaire, they could be a millionaire. My mother and father dreamed as much as any rich guy dreams.
Sounds like his parents were pretty conservative, actually, because they dreamed, and back then there wasn't an administration in place passing regulations and high burdens on businesses and others trying to create jobs and so forth. So sounds like he grew up in a better time than people are growing up now.
Greg, my favorite part of Biden's speech yesterday is when Joe Biden starts lecturing Mitt Romney about how to run a business and job creation. Joe Biden, who has been in the Senate since 1972, and it got me kind of digging. Greg, you work for a radio company. I work for a magazine and website and various other media entities. And this is not, you know, they're the private sector, although there are times National Review feels like the inadvertent nonprofit sector, the wanting profits and not always generating them through the sector. But if you think about it, you look at a lot of politicians, you know, they spend their career in politics, so they don't spend a lot of time in the private sector. The last time you could really argue that Obama did anything resembling full-time private sector work was 1996, and that was when he was for a law firm. And there are some folks who would argue the law firm is representative of the private sector. Some would say it's a little different. Certainly it's different from running a small business or manufacturing or anything things that most people traditionally think of as the engines of the American economy. And then you look at Joe Biden, and I don't believe, other than his own personal law firm, which he only ran for a couple of years, Joe Biden has spent his entire life in the public sector. So the idea that Joe Biden, of all people, is going to run around telling people how to create jobs and what businesses need to succeed, it's kind of like getting meat grilling and barbecue recipes from a vegetarian. You know, I mean, this is a guy who just has no personal experience in what he's talking about, other than how to create regulations and some would argue, ways to impede jobs. But I think this kind of says something about the Obama administration, that they can't bring out someone who they would argue is a very useful expert on job creation in the private sector, because there's nobody in the administration who's done that. They're all a bunch of public sector, former academic, former lawyer folks who spend their lives in you know, the left, within the public sector and nonprofits, and you know, some would argue the takers, not the makers.
But somebody probably wrote a paper that Joe Biden skimmed recently. So.
Or a note card, you know.
He probably just watched the video that was untrue about Bain Capital's handling of the steel plant. So now he feels like he's got a leg up on Mitt Romney. But anyway, we'll see what Uncle Joe has to offer tomorrow and the rest of the week. Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Looking forward to it, Greg. See you tomorrow.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us again on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.